That is a Zurich S-Bahn, a train in a country that people point to as the gold standard, a transit utopia that runs with such precision. It borderlines on the miraculous, simply because it does what it says on the tin.
But what makes the Zurich S-Bahn impressive isn't the ridership numbers or how extensive it is. It's the fact that it went from a very tricky political shitfight amongst the city to absolute GOAT status. However, Zurich is a bit different from other cities kicking around the political football of endless broken promises we've seen in places like Australia or North America. Zurich actually had the opposite problem. Usually the biggest obstacle to building public transport is politicians. But in Zurich, for decades, the biggest obstacle was people. Because the S-Bahn was born from a decades-long political fight against the rise of the car and a series of failed transport plans that nearly left the city stuck in permanent gridlock. This wasn't just a project that happened. It was a generation-defining choice that required a massive institutional shake-up and iterative development to succeed.
In this video, we're going beyond the scenic views, and we're going to look at the policy and procurement that turned some random train lines into a system that international experts now study, and how it became an S-Bahn to rule all S-Bahns. Perfect timing.
But as much as I want to, I'm not just going to stand there and glaze the trains or read stuff off Wikipedia, as there are enough videos from other YouTubers you can watch to do that. Though there will be some glazing, we're going to do more than that. We're going to look at how a small city managed to massively punch above its weight to create a goated train system. What this guy vibing in a tree next to me, vibing amongst other people, has to do with the S-Bahn, and you best believe we're going to cover the lessons it holds for cities around the world, trying to figure out which way is up of a metro to finally build those succulent trains.
A succulent Chinese meal.
I'm Streets and Scars, and this is the Zurich S-Bahn story.
The Zurich S-Bahn is a ridiculously extensive railway network for a city this size. Opened in 1990, it spans roughly 380 kilometers, consists of 32 lines, and carries around 215 million passengers every single year. That works out to just under 600,000 people per day, which is a pretty impressive figure for a city of only 450,000 people. And I know my fellow Zurichers are already yelling at the screen because that population figure only accounts for the city of Zurich itself. The Zurich S-Bahn, like many S-Bahn networks in Europe, takes its name from the city it serves. But it is far more than a suburban railway. It is a regional transport network connecting the entire canton of Zurich and beyond, linking major towns, tiny villages, and even neighboring countries, and everything in between into one giant commuter ecosystem. Since its opening in 1990, the system increased ridership a whopping 270% in the region by 2012. But here's the crazy part. The Zurich S-Bahn's greatest achievement isn't how many people it moves. It's the fact that it's super reliable. Running hundreds of stations, dozens of lines, and mixing with regional and long-distance trains, it still achieves a 98% punctuality rating. No, I didn't stutter. 98% of trains are on time. That's impressive for a simple metro line. But for a regional railway, where one late train can throw an entire network out of sync, that's bloody unreal. It's why cities around the world keep studying Zurich's approach, not because of a single miracle project, but because of how well all the pieces work together. But what makes the Zurich S-Bahn particularly interesting is that it was never some obvious solution that everyone agreed on from the beginning. Because after World War II, Zurich didn't really have the benefit of hindsight. As the concept of an S-Bahn was still relatively new, with no real definition of what it is, and depending on who you ask, the name is already a little confusing.
S-Bahn comes from Stadtbahn, or Schnellbahn. I'm actually not too sure which one's correct. Just don't call it a Stadtschnellbahn, because that would give it a very unfortunate acronym for something that originated from Berlin during a very awkward time of German history.
Naming convention aside, what Zurich did know was that they had two major problems on their hands back after World War II. First was traffic congestion. The second was a fragmented railway system operated by multiple different companies, all serving the same growing metropolitan region, but not necessarily working together as one network. There are a lot of regional lines that form part of the Zurich S-Bahn network, but they deserve their own video. So I'll primarily be talking about the lines that go through the city of Zurich, but whenever a growing city faces a transport crisis, all the big beautiful ideas start appearing. Should Zurich build more roads? What about a high-speed train? Should it build a subway system? Should it expand conventional rail?
Not you, Brisbane Metro!
With the rise of private car ownership after the war and declining passenger rail use, the answer was far from obvious, because Swiss people don't just wake up one morning and say, build an S-Bahn.
So how did Zurich end up creating one of the most revolutionary and successful commuter rail systems in the world?
To find out how Zurich ended up with such a trad transport network, we need to go back to a time when Grandpa said it was the best, the 50s.
The 50s were a fascinating time for Switzerland and Europe as a whole. Germany was rebuilding, humans made a spicy rock boil water, and two major forces began reshaping cities. The rise of the private car and suburbanization. Unlike its neighbors, Switzerland avoided the massive destruction of World War II, giving its relatively healthy economy a head start as Europe entered a period of rapid growth. And Zurich emerged as a financial powerhouse. Rising prosperity meant more citizens could afford the latest automotive exports from neighboring countries, including brands like Porsche, who started manufacturing boring but fuel-efficient models such as the Porsche 356, instead of the fun, less efficient Panzerkampfwagen 8.
Now, as more and more residents could afford a private car, a new reality became possible. Living in the countryside, all around nature, whilst driving and commuting into the city for a well-paying job.
So, naturally, that's what everyone did. Kicking off suburbanization and driving, pun intended, the increase in congestion. Now, you'd be shocked to hear that the train-crazy nation of Switzerland dealt with the rise of traffic in the most obvious way imaginable. Like the prevailing American car culture of the time, they built highways. Everywhere. But as much as I want to flame them for it, car drivers deserve a little treat once in a while, and there's no way that the two-lane roads of small villages could handle today's traffic demands. But this plan quickly encountered problems. They realized that one more lane, bro, might not be enough, and also, people found out that more highways actually kind of suck. Fortunately for Zurich, it wasn't starting from scratch. Like many European cities, it already had an extensive railway network built in the previous century. After World War II, rail remained popular. But its dominance began to fade as cars became cheaper, faster, and supported by massive highway investments. While many rail lines declined, some actually continued to grow as more people commuted into Zurich for work.
And one of those lines that saw massive passenger growth was the Zurich Meilen Rapperswil railway line that goes through what's colloquially known as the Gold Coast.
In 1945, the canton of Zurich had just 6 cars per 1,000 residents. 5 years later, that number had increased sevenfold. Suddenly, the region faced a massive problem it had never experienced before. Too many people, too many cars, and infrastructure not built for either. Now, traffic clogged the region, obviously, especially along the Gold Coast, where roads into Zurich were limited. But alongside those congested roads ran a railway struggling to keep up. Its slow, often hourly trains were still made up of slow and shitty locomotive-hauled carriages. So, in 1954, SBB, the canton of Zurich, and the city of Zurich brought together a transport planning A-team to study the region's future. One of their proposals was upgrading the Gold Coast Railway, double-tracking bottlenecks, adding stations to serve the rapidly urbanizing former vineyards, and increasing frequencies for growing commuter demand.
And here we come to the proto-S-Bahn, the Gold Coast Express.
To go along with the new tracks, the new RABDE 12/12 electric multiple unit, God, what a mouthful, introduced in 1968 was a completely different beast. Unlike the older trains designed decades before the war, this new train was lighter, had 3 doors per carriage for faster passenger boarding, and could accelerate and brake much quicker. The result was shorter dwell times, faster journeys, and a railway much better suited to the demands of a growing suburban region.
The speediness of this new vehicle dropped the trip time from Rapperswil to Zurich from around 60 minutes to around 40 minutes, and massively drove passenger growth along this line. Some might call that induced demand.
But improving the network came with a familiar transport investment problem. How were they going to pay for it? After all, this is the country where you pay per individual rubbish bag, so somebody was definitely going to send an invoice. Even with the rising ridership, SBB couldn't fund the track upgrades and new trains alone, while the canton couldn't carry the cost either. So Zurich did what Swiss politics does best. It found a compromise. The canton and benefiting municipalities contributed financially to the railway upgrades, sharing the cost of building a better network. And thus, in 1968, the little red train started speeding up and down the lakeside with a frequency of every 30 minutes, aptly named the Mirage, to give Zurich its first taste of S-Bahn blood.
And they wanted
more! Because the Gold Coast wasn't the only part of Zurich experiencing rapid suburban growth and increasing commuter traffic. Naturally, other areas of Canton Zurich looked at the shiny new train speeding along the lake and thought,
hey, that's pretty good.
But expanding this project across the whole Zurich region was a little bit more complicated, because the Zurich-Rapperswil railway line was the logical place to start.
It wasn't carrying major freight or long-distance services, allowing SBB to dramatically increase local train frequencies without disrupting the wider network. Replicating this elsewhere would be harder, as many Zurich rail corridors were shared with freight and intercity trains competing for limited track space. So the lesson was clear. Zurich didn't just need better railway lines, it needed a regional railway system, and that meant thinking much bigger. But for the next mass transit project in the region, the Gold Coast had actually provided some crucial lessons. Lesson 1. High capacity and high frequency are crucial. Lesson 2. Commuter rail needs to be separated from cargo and long-distance trains to achieve high service levels. And lesson 3. Fundamentally, you need a collaborative funding agreement between all levels of government. These were important lessons for Zurich's next project, because mass transit planning didn't end with the Gold Coast Express, and traffic growth kept driving ever more ambitious and sometimes wild transport proposals.
Such as this, the Y Expressway. This was proposed to deal with the growing car traffic in Canton Zurich. I won't go into it in this video because I've already promised it in another one, and I assume my audience doesn't want this to turn into a 1 hour deep dive. So I'll summarize it just like this.
The city put up such a horrific shitfight against it, the Canton just didn't bother in the end. Okay, fine, said the Canton. You don't want a highway. How about a mass transit solution in the form of a metro? Or U-Bahn, to be language specific. Why they went with an U-Bahn is also a long story, but there were two glaring reasons. Post-World War II cities loved the idea that public transport can be put underground to make more space for cars.
And this, Zurich Main Station.
Since it was first built in 1847, Zurich was a terminus station that sat at the foot of an already urbanized hill, where every line from north, south, east, and west had to jam their way down the track throat to reach the station. Get your mind out of the gutter. But for the uninitiated transport dorks, terminus stations have horrific capacities compared with through-running stations due to many reasons, primarily being that trains have to reverse out and pathfind their way through the track switches slowly to clear the throat. I won't go into it, but there's a reason Stuttgart is able to cut down the number of platforms from 16 to 8 and increase capacity when that thing finally opens.
And Zurich Station was no different, but being backed up against a heavily urbanized Zurichberg, it's not so easy to rectify. However, with an U-Bahn, that problem would be easily solved by just simply going underneath all your problems. Get your mind out of the gutter. It's honestly like a beautiful, beautiful station building here. It's an amazing hall. And fun fact, this giant open space here used to be something else. That you'll have to wait for another video because it's going to be such a comprehensive one.
The U-Bahn idea was, quite frankly, a pretty good one. The concept was really simple. Create a high-capacity, high-frequency rapid transit system that could serve the areas where Zurich's growth was already consolidating. Because by the early 70s, regions immediately surrounding the city, such as the Limmat Valley, Oerlikon, the airport corridor, and communities along the left bank of Lake Zurich, had become heavily urbanized and increasingly dependent on fast connections into the city. A dedicated U-Bahn network would have been designed to handle these growing travel demands, providing frequent, reliable service through the densest parts of the metropolitan area. And the Canton was very keen.
But also included in this U-Bahn proposal, planners snuck in a regional train line that would go within a tunnel from Dietlikon underneath Zurichberg and then underneath the main station. Looks familiar, doesn't it?
The idea for the new underground tunnel was to take pressure off Oerlikon and the main station hall, already clogged with trains.
This double whammy of an U-Bahn proposal and an underground regional train tunnel is a no-brainer, right?
It ticks all the boxes from the lessons learned from the proto-S-Bahn. It's high capacity and high frequency. It improves commuter services by separating them from cargo and long-distance services. It solves the through-station problem of Zurich Main Station. And it'll have a robust funding model from the Canton. So in 1973, the question was put to a direct vote by the Canton of whether they should build an U-Bahn. But there was a huge vulnerability with this proposal. As it was a Canton-wide vote to finance a project that mostly benefits this area, it led to the most expected outcomes.
Oh, my boss would have my ass.
Are you crazy, Jim? Get lost,
fuck you.
Yeah, people not living anywhere near this project didn't want to pay for it if they didn't benefit from it. And wait, Stadt Zurich, what the fuck? Why did you vote no? I hate to be that guy, but you'll have to wait for the Zurich U-Bahn video to find out why almost everyone said no to a project that many other cities could only dream of building. And no, it wasn't for finance reasons, but it unfortunately wasn't just an U-Bahn that was being proposed and subsequently rejected. the underground through tunnel for regular heavy rail was collateral damage.
So the U-Bahn and heavy rail tunnel through the city was dead in the water, leaving planners scratching their head as to what to do next. This left the city and the canton absolutely tearing their hair out, trying to figure out how to deal with this growing traffic problem, and quite frankly, a very cantankerous NIMBY constituency.
You don't want a highway project. You don't want a mass transit U-Bahn project. What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? God damn it. What do you want? But instead of throwing their hands up in the air and saying cars are the best mode of transport, brandishing mass transit a woke conspiracy, and letting the existing infrastructure get overwhelmed by the still growing Zurich population, the decision makers did something completely radical and unheard of in many countries who get stuck with political football kicking.
They actually analyzed why people rejected the proposal.
They went through a lot of feedback and community consultation reports, media articles, etc. And what they found were the next major lessons and concepts necessary to the success in building a great mass transit system.
Although people were opposed to the U-Bahn project, they weren't at all opposed to the through tunnel underneath the city. They were actually quite supportive of it. In fact, people quite liked it, as it overall improved services with regards to speed, reliability, and capacity, particularly with services between growing regional centres, such as Winterthur, where there was a rapid growth in commuter ridership.
Whilst, yes, the U-Bahn did get rejected for honestly the weirdest reasons, there was no denying that the city was absolutely frothing for mass transit for the densest areas where most people live. And that gives us a final and crucial lesson.
Big projects need big support. To secure canton-wide funding, places like Winterthur all the way to Bauma needed to see a benefit in order to secure their support and their votes.
So by the late 1970s, the canton was basically 0 for 2 in finding a transport solution for the growing commuter traffic of Zurich. But for the third try, creating a comprehensive transport solution, they've been armed with some super important lessons to apply to the next proposal. Let's quickly recap. They need high capacity and high frequency for regional and dense areas. Commuter rail needs to be separated as much as possible from long distance and cargo services. A through station at Zurich main station needs to be established. Canton-wide financing and benefits needs to be widespread. It needs to be fast enough to compete with private car travel. Upon first look at these lessons, it seems quite simple, but there was a much bigger challenge facing Zurich. The Gold Coast Express proved that suburban rail could work. But scaling that idea up across the entire region was far more complicated.
And the reason comes down to Zurich's geography.
Unlike a massive city like London or Paris, where you have one dominant urban core that transitions gently into suburbs, Canton Zurich is more polycentric. You have a relatively dense urban area around Zurich itself, then suddenly countryside, then another town or regional centre, then another high-density city. This created a difficult transport problem.
What type of railway do you actually build?
Because different parts of the region need different types of transport. Dense urban areas need metro-like services, extremely high frequency and fast boarding. But metros are not great over longer distances because they stop frequently and prioritize line capacity over speed. Regional trains are the opposite. They are much faster over medium distances and can connect towns across the region, but they don't have the same capacity or frequency as a metro. And then you have intercity trains, which are excellent at connecting major centers. But if you fill them with suburban passengers, you create a very uncomfortable sardine express, which is where the S-Bahn vehicle capacity requirement comes in. But a normal S-Bahn is a jack of all trades and sort of really a master of none.
The problem was, Zurich needed all four.
But as wealthy as the country and the canton of Zurich were, they couldn't simply build a metro here, a regional rail there, a really big train here, and an intercity tunnel over there. Someone somewhere would eventually have to explain to the taxpayers why they needed to pay for four different railways doing four different jobs. So when Zurich had to decide between a metro for dense urban areas, regional trains for the suburbs, S-Bahn trains for carrying capacity, and intercity trains for longer distance travel, they chose... yes.
So Zurich decided to build a Captain Planet of railways, a transit system that combines the strength of all four.
Of course, trying to make one system do everything comes with hella risks. If you design it badly, you end up with something that is neither fish nor bird. I mean, just ask my home city of Brisbane. What happens when you try to build a metro with the flexibility and cost of a bus? You basically just get an expensive bus. But before Zurich could create this railway superhero, it had to solve the biggest weakness of the existing network, Zurich Hauptbahnhof, a terminus station. Taking the concept from the U-Bahn S-Bahn proposal, Zurich Transport Planners proposed a new viaduct from Dietlikon in the east towards Stettbach, where a new station would be built. Then a 5-kilometer tunnel underneath Zürichberg to Stadelhofen station to meet up with the Rapperswil line.
This proposal had a triple benefit: relieving the main station by way of a through tunnel, decongesting the busy Oerlikon tracks and station, and eliminating the somewhat cumbersome Hirschengraben tunnel and Letten viaduct.
You can actually see the former Hirschengraben tunnel portal at Stadelhofen that leads to the disused Letten train station, which now explains why me and this guy in a tree are vibing. Because instead of doing the standard economic man thing and selling the surplus rail land after the tunnel opened, the disused train track along the Letten became a city park icon, right next to the canal of a hydro plant full of glacial water, where people come to swim and do other things. It's an absolute vibe. Though this will be a video for another time, there's a huge story to this. Back to adult stuff. In 1981, the umpteenth vote for a transit solution was put to the canton. And as they say, third time's a charm, as the whole canton emphatically voted for the Zurich S-Bahn. And a mere 9 years later, the first train rolled through the new Stadelhofen station on the 27th of May, 1990. The total final construction cost was estimated to be just over 500 million francs in 1990, which, yeah, it isn't cheap, but the benefits were extensive, and maintaining the standard gauge and overhead electrification meant the tunnel would be open to be used by any train when capacity allows, including a French TGV train, as seen here soon after the station opened. Or, in my really lucky moment, I got to see a turbo regional train drive through. Now, as well as S-Bahn trains being open to using the existing infrastructure, something a lot of other third rail systems cannot do in case of major disruption. This new tunnel would drastically increase the frequencies of all major lines, as trains didn't have to reverse out of the main station and slowly navigate their way through numerous track switches. They could just yeet it out of the station. And because the wider rail network would now converge at certain points of the city, such as Stadelhofen and Harzbrücke, the 30-minute frequencies of the multiple lines would combine to create frequencies of a train roughly every 5 minutes in peak hour for the dense urban core. And this gives us the first of its many faces, the S-Bahn Metro, providing high-frequency services, efficiently shifting thousands of people in the urban core. But even though the tunnel was the key piece of missing infrastructure, it still wasn't the GOAT S-Bahn yet we know today.
All right, everybody in the pool!
It is a fine barn, but sure tis no pool, English.
Along with this stupid thing, the revolutionary Mirage train of the 60s was definitely not up to the new task by only having space for about 720 people, both standing and seated. A new rolling stock solution was required to go with the brand spanking new track infrastructure.
So it's time we talk about the rolling stock of Zurich.
Now, when Zurich S-Bahn was planned, planners expected demand to keep growing, meaning far more capacity would be needed. But capacity comes from two things: how many people each train carries, and how often it runs. Metro systems achieve huge capacity mainly through frequency, not just bigger trains. Problem was, the S-Bahn would often run only every 30 minutes, meaning Zurich needed much larger trains to compensate, and they needed to beef up their rolling stock.
And beef up they did.
If 300-meter long suburban trains, which is bloody long, might I add, wasn't enough, these trains would have to be double-decker to nearly double the capacity to cater for the thousands of people expected to travel on the new system. Double-decker trains in Paris and Netherlands had proven their worth in the 80s, so SBB put out a tender in the 80s with the requirement for a high-capacity, fast-accelerating, 130-kilometer-an-hour top-speed, low-maintenance, and some storage space. After testing prototypes such as the French SNCF double-decker train and a low-floor door option, SBB settled on the machine that's gonna hard-carry the people like me and COD, the DPZ. Doppelstock Pendelzug, or double-decker commuter train. It's a not low-floor three-car wagon with wide doors to keep dwell times low during massive crowds, all driven by a locomotive. Later on, it would have one carriage updated to level boarding during modern-day refurbishment program. Why a locomotive that would take up a whole carriage space and not an EMU is because in the 80s, EMU technology was still limited and couldn't provide the required top speed, acceleration, and capacity that a locomotive hauled double-decker wagon could. Which is hilarious, because these things are slated to be in operation until 2031. And when you see three of these sets coupled together, you get an absolutely ridiculous sight. A 300-meter long train with three locomotives hauling approximately 1,000 people.
Three locomotives in 2026 is just stupid and wrong and silly, and that is why I absolutely love this thing. And so did Microsoft too, as they made it a Microsoft Word title page template, which I very frequently use for my assignments when I was going through university.
But the rolling stock development didn't stop there, because those three locomotives were taking up valuable passenger space. So, after introducing a four-car Siemens double-decker EMU to the network in 2007, on the 5th of September, 2011, SBB released an absolute giga-chad monster S-Bahn train on the public. This is the Stadler Kiss, with the naughty name standing for Komfortable Innovative Spurstarke S-Bahn Zug, or Comfortable Innovative Sprinter S-Bahn Train. This 300-meter-long beast in a two-set configuration can carry around 2,700 people. In case you can't math or need a conversion to freedom units, that's the same as 540 SUVs full of people. And it's not like the people are packed in like sardines either, as it still has two toilets, space for bicycles and wheelchairs, as well as a first class, and weighing nearly 600,000 kilos. You'd think it's slowy and soggy, like me on a Sunday morning after a bender.
I can assure you it's not, because Stadler read the design briefs of high frequency, high speed, and lots of stops, and went, okay.
Slap eight of the fattest motor we have into each set and give it the fast and furious tuning treatment of cranking the turbo boost pressure to large oof. Now with 6,000 kilowatts of power, the Kiss is not exactly struggling in the horsepower department. It can technically reach 200 kilometers an hour, and with a power to weight ratio of around 20 kilowatts per ton, it accelerates at roughly 1.1 meters per second, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for a train, that's bloody good. This thing is crazy, and is half the reason Zurich's S-Bahn can move so many people. I mean, just look at this thing, clearing out a platform full of commuters at Zurich Main Station. And it is this capability that gives us the next superpower, the carrying capacity of an S-Bahn SIS on steroids. Sure, the Japanese E325 carries more people, but that's because it's optimized for mostly standing room and dick in our 6 people per square meter sardine configuration.
But buying a new shiny new train and tunnels is all great and all.
But if you don't have a plan for how to actually use them, you've basically just dumped a few billion dollars into buying all the gear with no idea.
I'm looking at you, Sydney.
I'll get into the Sydney drama in another video, but the point stands. Good operations are arguably more important than the infrastructure itself. To squeeze the most out of Zurich's impressive network, SBB does some weird and wonderful things to get you home in under 30 minutes, which is roughly the limit where thoughts of punching your boss in the face stop being intrusive and start sounding reasonable.
Now, to keep speeds high and you out of prison from punching your boss, Zurich S-Bahn does a really simple strategy of just skipping stops. It's really easy, actually.
As an example, the S5 and S15 will breeze past four stations after Schadelhofen before they even think about stopping at Uster. While this saves 8 minutes of your life, it's more important for SBB to use that 8 minutes to get to more customers within the allotted 30 minutes, and leaves those skip stations for a leisurely all-stop service. Okay, yes, this doesn't sound so profound or revolutionary. Lots of commuter rail systems have express trains, but in Zurich they are used extensively and are taken to the next level, because none is more egregious than the S25 to Linthal. This train skips a whopping 9 stations, totaling approximately 20 kilometers of urban areas, just to serve a sparsely populated valley 80 kilometers away. It is the transit equivalent of me skipping all the tourist sites on holiday and going straight to the pub. It's more like a regional express train, but it's technically an S-Bahn.
But the most important speed run is the winter tour to Zurich line.
Thanks to the new viaduct and tunnel, the S11 and S12 skip the choked throats of Oerlikon Station. Don't, because passenger load factors between the cities of Winterthur and Zurich are quite heavy, with around 120,000 people commuting between the two cities daily, but not so much the stations in between. Sure, there are intercity trains that are designed exactly for this role, but those trains are designed for maximum comfort for much longer distances, with lots of seats, but unfortunately less space for wheelchairs, bicycles, and the meat we refer to as people standing.
Hello, little swan. How you doing? You little cutie?
These videos take a lot of effort and resources to make, so if you really want to support me directly, I've got a Ko-fi link where you can donate directly to the channel, so suggest anything you'd like me to do.
But as the S-Bahns have bonkers capacity and run express services, you can already put two and two together.
And that gives us the next face of the S-Bahn. the intercity S-Bahn.
But this intercity capacity monster has a problem. Because as I said before, the major load factors are between Zurich and Winterthur. But what happens after that? Because beyond Winterthur, load factors drop off hard. So sending a 300-meter long train to a tiny village of a few hundred people like Reutlingen is honestly a bit of a waste of resources. Ridership data shows very strong drop-offs after trains leave heavily urbanized areas. And it would also require 300-meter long platforms in places where the most exciting thing that happens is watching the grass be cut. Which I do love, to be fair. So, to be just that little bit more efficient and save some money, SBB likes to trim the fat, literally, from these S-Bahn chonkers
by dynamically separating or connecting train sets depending on passenger load.
And that gives us the final face of this system, the regional S-Bahn, as the system provides effective and efficient access to the regional areas from Zurich. Most cities are lucky that they can get a single subway line built without it turning into a politicized half-century-long drama. But Zurich managed to create a hybrid, a system that acts like a high-frequency metro in the urban core, then pivots into high-speed intercity service the moment it hits the suburbs.
Now I could show you with some lines on maps how this train does four systems in one go in one line. Or I could just show you in person. So check this out.
A very kind SBB driver offered me a front row seat of the action. Many thanks to those who made that happen and to SBB for letting me sit in the jump seat. So we started here in Soitzach Station, a small town of about 8,000 people, with many Zurich commuters that need to travel about 24 kilometers to get to work. I've obviously sped it up, but the stations until Winterthur are akin to a simple regional train. Low demand with medium stop spacing. At Winterthur Station, we pick up a lot more passengers. Not that many though, because it's just after peak hour. But usually this platform is crawling with people at between 7 and 8 a.m. Leaving Winterthur is when we switch the train into intercity mode, and the driver hammers it up to 130 kilometers an hour, and we skip Kemptal, Effretikon, and Dietlikon, where we effectively become an intercity train. After speeding through the Swiss countryside, the intercity train reaches Stettbach, the first station in Zurich's urban area. From here, it begins operating almost like a metro, serving an already dense urban environment that continues to grow with new high-rise residential developments. We continue this metro-style service through Stadelhofen, Kalatrava's architectural masterpiece, before arriving at Zurich HB, where the timetable generously includes enough dwell time to absorb most minor delays. Leaving the main station, we surge up the tunnel exit ramp at a steep 2.7%, climbing back into daylight. Now from here, the character of the journey changes. What was effectively a metro through central Zurich becomes a classic all-stop S-Bahn service, punctuated by occasional bursts of speed on sections such as the Heitersberg Tunnel and Lenzburg to Aarau, where the KISS shows off only 80% of its maximum by doing 150 kilometers an hour. And finally, despite the driver repeatedly and very politely declining my offers to drive the train on the grounds that my 1 hour of train simulator experience might not constitute adequate training, we eventually arrive in Aarau. So there are four rail modes in one single line. And this is basically the ultimate example of train maxing, taking every possible advantage of an existing system and pushing it to ridiculous levels. Whilst it didn't completely solve congestion in the region, it certainly prevented Carmageddon gridlock by absorbing the majority of new commuters as the population grew. But there's still one final piece of the puzzle that truly cemented the Zurich S-Bahn status as a goated commuter rail.
Oh, I love this city. Oh my god.
The success of the S-Bahn wasn't simply the result of building new tunnels, introducing modern rolling stock, or extending rail service into every corner of the canton. While those investments were critical, they weren't the only reason voters emphatically supported the project in 1981. One of the most important promises made during the referendum campaign was that the S-Bahn would form the backbone of a fully integrated transport network, spanning the entire canton.
Today, that might not sound particularly revolutionary. Most people just expect buses, trains, trams, boats, and cable cars to work together. But before 1990, Zurich's public transport was far more fragmented than people realise.
Before 1990, the Zurich transit scene was basically a collection of independent operators all off doing random things, which is a polite way of saying it was a logistical chaos. Municipalities handled local buses, regional rails obsessed over their own tiny fiefdoms, and timetables aligned with each other about as well as a screen door on a submarine.
The fuck? It's the same case. Do the same thing.
Now, it was nowhere near as disjointed as cities in the English-speaking world, because even in the 70s, the Swiss figured out proper intermodal transfer nodes. But timetables between various modes didn't line up, leading to missed transfers and longer than necessary transfer times. But that wasn't the worst of it. Before 1990, if you lived in a small village and wanted to visit the beautiful Uetliberg to look over Zurich, you would have had to purchase four separate transport tickets just to get there. Four separate tickets for the same journey was about as convenient as a hard kick in the shins. But there was no obligation for the transport companies to cooperate with each other.
The S-Bahn vote promised to change all of that.
The goal wasn't only to improve train services. Planners wanted every form of public transport across the canton, local buses, regional railways, trams, boats, cable cars, and the new S-Bahn itself to operate as a single coordinated system. To achieve this, the canton established the Zürcher Verkehrsverbund, or ZVV, in 1990. The creation of the ZVV transformed public transport in Zurich by unifying both ticketing and network planning under a single organizational framework. Instead of paying each operator separately, passengers simply bought access to the zones they wanted to travel through, regardless of whether they used trains, trams, boats, buses, or cable cars. It sounded like a small administrative change, but it transformed usability. Passengers no longer needed to know who operated a service, only where they wanted to go. But the ZVV also has another trick. It pools all funding across the network, allowing less profitable routes to maintain high quality service, because more than 60% of operating costs are covered by fares, an exceptionally high fare box recovery ratio for a regional transport network. However, ticket integration was only part of the story.
The real breakthrough came from coordinating the entire system around Switzerland's Taktfahr Plan strategy.
If you don't already know what that is, check out my old video on why Swiss trains are slow. But here's a quick rundown. Train timetables are configured so that trains arrive at stations at the same time to facilitate really quick transfers, which explains why all these trains are lined up at the same time. So people from this train transfer easily to this train with minimal waiting time. It's an impressive piece of engineering. The Taktfahr Plan is most known for coordinating Swiss train to allow 98% of connections to be achieved. But what people don't know is it doesn't just apply to trains. It applies to every mode of transport in the country. If you board a bus in Gossau and travel to Uster station, there is a very good chance that your connecting train will depart only a few minutes after you arrive. Likewise, when you arrive at a major interchange, buses, trams, and regional trains are often waiting to distribute passengers onwards to their final destinations. Now, these connections are carefully designed around pulsing clock face schedules that make transfers predictable, reliable, and most of all, short throughout the day.
The result is a public transport network that requires remarkably little planning from passengers.
So many times I've left the house without checking a timetable because I know that my bus to the station would connect with the train and that on the other end there would probably be another bus waiting for me. The coordination becomes really obvious at the major interchange stations. Hop off an S-Bahn and there's a good chance your regional train will be waiting on the platform opposite. It's one of those operational details that sounds mundane but dramatically improves the passenger experience. I'm not going to pretend that cars aren't faster without traffic, but these short transfer times make the journey more digestible as transfers are perceived as wasted time by commuters.
And ZVV became the mechanism that allowed the infrastructure investment to reach its full potential.
The tunnels, stations, and trains provided capacity, and the ZVV integration was the sniffing salt that turbocharged it. One of the ZVV's biggest superpowers is that it doesn't just organize public transport. It's also a major player when it comes to urban development. It works alongside the canton's planning and economic departments to coordinate where new housing and jobs can be catered for, avoiding the mega idiotic planning process we love so much in Australia. Out of sequence development.
But enough glazing.
What are the downsides? Does it have downsides?
Look, I know I spent the last 20 minutes glazing the system like it's a fresh Krispy Kreme.
But surely it can't be perfect. And it isn't.
The Zurich S-Bahn has some genuine weaknesses.
Now, none of them are deal breakers, especially compared to the radial transport messes we see in the Anglosphere, but they're worth a rant. First off, the network isn't actually 24/7. Zurich does operate a nighttime network, but that's generally on a Friday or Saturday night. During the rest of the week, you're mostly on your own, something World Cup fans watching 1 a.m. matches discovered the hard way. It may sound like a minor inconvenience, but for shift workers, airport staff, and hospital employees, it is a deal breaker. And also, who drives the train drivers?
The second weakness is even more annoying because it's actually the network's biggest blessing that became one of its biggest curse.
The S-Bahn is so popular, it actually started to hit the limits of its own infrastructure.
We are starting to see overcrowding at stations like Altstetten that are a bit underdimensioned, getting clogged after having two KISS trains dump hundreds of people onto the platform at once. But also when trains get cancelled in peak hour, major stations get overcrowded, which is a real safety hazard as people get pushed closer to the platform edge. Fixing this isn't easy. Rail capacity comes down to two things: vehicle capacity and frequency. Zurich has already pushed train length close to the limit. Go much longer and you need stations the size of a small city, so the only option is more trains. But that's easier said than done. Unlike a metro, the S-Bahn shares tracks with regional and intercity services. Different speeds, stopping patterns, and junctions create conflicts, where one delay can trigger a chain reaction. And no amount of ETCS can solve a fundamentally crowded railway. As an example, my S-Bahn train to work in the morning is often delayed by, wait for it, a German ICE train that needs to overtake us. Though I'm actually not sure if this is because of a super tight scheduling conflicts in the system, or if the ICE train was delayed arriving in Switzerland and subsequently got pushed back to a less optimal slot. But not to worry. By Brugg, the S-Bahn will have absorbed all minor delays thanks to the driver slapping the turbo button. But Zurich is working on this. Firstly, by constructing iterative capacity upgrades to bring the standard frequency of lines down from every 30 minutes to every 15, by further deconflicting tracks, and ultimately, by creating dedicated metro S-Bahns that work as high accelerating and decelerating S-Bahns in the inner urban area, and leaving the express S-Bahns to serve the more regional sections, just like we see with the Uster line with the S5 and S15, as the inner city and immediate surrounding areas represent the bulk of ridership demand. Not to mention, Zurich main station is a bit of a buffer station where S-Bahn trains have a roughly 5-minute dwell time to eat up any minor delays. But if you're going from Hardbrücke to Stadelhofen, that 5-minute wait is quite annoying. The Zurich S-Bahn may have some glaring weaknesses, and I know the comment section is going to be filled with grievances like ticket pricing or that bins got removed at the seats, but the actual problems of capacity are iteratively being addressed. But this brings us to perhaps the most important point about the Zurich S-Bahn.
Because the S-Bahn wasn't built in a day.
The Zurich S-Bahn wasn't created by one mega project, the tunnel. It was the product of decades of different railway projects built for different reasons, gradually coming together into one integrated network. When people talk about the S-Bahn, they usually focus on the underground cross-city tunnel, and understandably so. It's a nice tunnel. But the mistake is thinking that the S-Bahn was built by that tunnel alone. Even during the decades when political attention focused on motorways and failed metro proposals, Switzerland never stopped improving its railways.
While political attention and financing was focused on ambitious motorway projects and failed U-Bahn proposals, the railway was quietly and iteratively improving itself in the background.
Instead of one mega project, Switzerland delivered dozens of smaller upgrades, removing bottlenecks, increasing speeds, adding new connections, and separating conflicting train movements. None were built specifically for the future S-Bahn, but together, they made it possible. Hardbrücke station emerged from the Käferberg tunnel project and is now a major S-Bahn tram and BRT interchange. The Zurich Airport rail link wasn't built for commuters. It was built because connecting Switzerland's largest airport to the rail network made strategic sense. But today, it's one of S-Bahn's most important corridors. The Heitersberg tunnel was designed to speed up national rail services by bypassing the slower route via Brugg and Baden. Today, the S11 to Aarau uses it as well. Likewise, the Zimmerberg tunnel improved long-distance services by bypassing the slower Lakeside line, but also unlocking valuable track capacity for the S-Bahn. Then finally came the Durchmesserlinie, the cross-city tunnel, allowing trains arriving from or heading north of the city to run through services instead of reversing at the main station. Although built primarily for long-distance services, the S-Bahn benefits enormously, and it also provides a vital diversion when the original S-Bahn tunnel or Stadelhofen is disrupted. But Swiss transport succeed because individual projects eventually become part of the larger system. But they're not done building yet, because they want... The Brutener Tunnel that they've already started working on will cut out the constrained double track between Winterthur and Zurich.
Lots of construction work going on here for the new Brutener Tunnel. It's going to go from Zurich, or just outside of Zurich, all the way to Winterthur, cutting out a lot of curves and expanding the track capacity.
The Zimmerberg-based tunnel too will avoid the single-track tunnel section to Zug. The Stadelhofen 4th platform project that was originally cut from the original S-Bahn project for cost reasons is now crucial to deconflicting the crossing trains. And a totally wild direct tunnel from Zurich to Aarau to connect with one of the two high-speed sections in the country are all projects on the list to get more out of the trains. This, altogether, gave us the GOAT S-Bahn we know today. But of course, it needs to be asked, how do cities like Brisbane with its Temu tier bus metro or Sydney actually build something like the Zurich S-Bahn?
To achieve Zurich's GOAT level S-Bahn, you can't just order a flashy new tunnel or a shiny new train as a one-size-fits-all solution.
So the first institutional lesson is,
build a network, not just projects.
Many cities chase shiny mega projects, spending billions on a single tunnel while the rest of the network falls behind. Brisbane is building its first underground rail tunnel, which is great, all hats off to it. But outside the city, trains still compete for single track sections while highways continue to expand, all because the tunnel looks cool on the election posters. This leads to the second lesson.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
We often misdiagnose why transport projects fail by taking the loudest objections at face value. But behind even the dumbest arguments is often a real problem being misunderstood. Again, take Brisbane as an example. Passenger surveys said people hated transfers on a bus, not because transfers are bad, but because they've been conditioned to expect a 40-minute wait for the next bus or train. So the government placates their trauma by ramming every bus from the suburbs into the narrow city tunnels and streets. And you can see in one of my very first videos what happens when you do that. Zurich, on the other hand, recognized this trap when voters rejected the underground rail. It wasn't that they opposed better public transport, they opposed a solution that only benefited a select few. So it's important to read between the lines of oftentimes the idiotic bullshit that gets thrown around.
The final lesson is the hardest.
You actually need to fund the thing. There is no grandiose bullshit tech shortcut that replaces long-term political commitment and funding. Throwing a mountain of money at transport all at once is a recipe for disaster. Big infrastructure projects are complex, so break them into smaller, more manageable stages. And yes, funding public transport is expensive, but we need to stop treating it as a cost. A good railway is an economic engine, because I'll let you in on a little secret. Ticket sales aren't SBB's most profitable revenue stream, it's real estate. In Zurich, people pay a premium to live near S-Bahn stations because they offer something invaluable, being able to have multiple beers after work and get home safely. And it's with these lessons I really hope my home country stops trying to build the "we have metro at home." Ah, oh, fucking hell. The Zurich S-Bahn is a special one.
It got me to work in the middle of buttfuck nowhere at 5 a.m. It also got me home from the middle of buttfuck nowhere at 5 a.m.
The Zurich S-Bahn is the product of political turmoil. But as they say, there's always a lesson in failure. And the Zurich S-Bahn is the infrastructure phoenix that rose from the ashes of that failure. I'm not going to pretend that it's the world's best train system that everyone needs to build, because each city has its own challenges that are different. There's just no way you'll get a massive 300-meter long KISS with only two doors per wagon to shift the amount of people per hour on the Yamanote line. And massive 300-meter long trains slotting seamlessly behind one another may be a little too complex for the once great rail city of London. But if I had to be on a train that needs to carry a lot of people a really far distance relatively quickly, and I've got a bicycle and a pack of beers for my small bladder, I'd sure as fuck know that I'd rather be on the Johnny Sins of the train world. But honestly, the biggest takeaway from this whole video is that cities like Brisbane should never use the size excuse as to why public transport sucks, because Brisbane has roughly the same population density and size as Canton Zurich. So stop making cheap excuses and just bloody build the damn thing. So thank you for being you, Zurich S-Bahn. I appreciate you.
Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Massive thanks go out to the guys who helped me film this, and of course to my channel supporters. It was a big one, and a huge thanks to SBB for letting me film inside one of their trains. To my Aussie audience, I also have a big one coming up for you. So don't forget to like, subscribe, push my algorithm, and if you want to support the channel directly, I've got a Ko-fi there where you can donate a beer. And if you do that, write in the comment what beer you think I should drink, you know? I like to try something new.